get the head moving here on First Up. Always moving and shaking when our man Josh Lundberg comes on the show. Kind enough to grace us with his presence this morning, as he does actually every Thursday morning, the Raptors beat with J-Lew and Nikki Reyes at 10 a.m. on Thursdays. And before he hits the airwaves, he joins us here on First Up. What's up, J-Lew?
What's up, guys?
What's up, buddy?
We're doing good, man. We're doing good. I speak for Carlo. It is Carlo's birthday today, by the way, Josh.
Oh,
so give him
a
little birthday wish.
Happy birthday, Carlo.
Mazel tov. Thank you.
Sup.
Mazel tov is his response, Josh. That's good stuff. So last night, Gary Trent gets ejected, and I haven't been as angry about an ejection since Mo Pete was ejected for lightly swatting at Vince Carter back in, like, 2004. That was my level of anger, Josh. Is it justified? And, by the way, the Raptors are losing 111-105 to Chicago last night, their third game in 4 nights, second half of a back-to-back, so not totally unexpected to lose. But the ejection of Trent, I thought, was egregious.
Yeah, I mean, I guess for him, he needs to be more careful, both in the sense that that was a close game. Late in the game, you've got to be a little bit more careful there and maybe read the room a little bit. Like, Tony Brothers and the officiating crew, I mean, the whistle was pretty loose when it came to techs and all that extracurricular stuff. Yesterday, DeMar DeRozan got a tech for slamming the ball down. And I guess this was a similar idea. They were not happy with his gesture, the clap, and whatever else, pointing at his arm. But with that said, yeah, I mean, I don't know how you can call that at the end of a close game. And, yeah, I mean, you know the whistle's all over the place when an official has to come out after the game and explain, one, why a player wasn't ejected. The DeMar DeRozan thing was confusing because he gets a tech, then he gets a second tech, and he's still around. They explained afterwards that first technical foul was for holding the mesh when going up for the block. So it was a non-unsportsmanlike technical. But then, of course, he explained the second or the double technical, I guess, for Gary Trent as coming from a gesture that they weren't happy about. So, yeah, I mean, it's a close game. Let the players decide the game, the outcome. I wasn't very happy about that, and clearly neither were the Raptors.
No, and I mean, Gary Trent was the guy who kind of got them back in that game with 16 points in the third quarter. And we don't, at least here on this show, I'm sure you probably have had this conversation before, but the Gary Trent trade, of course, Norman Powell going to Portland, Trenton, was it Rodney Hood who came along with Gary Trent last year? That is something that probably we don't give enough credit to Bobby Webster and Masai Ujiri for. What an outstanding deal to get a young player like Trent. I think he's 22, 23. They signed him long-term in the past offseason, and he's developed not only with his scoring. We know he's got 32 points in his last two games, and he was awesome again last night, awesome the night before against Charlotte. But defensively, he's up there in the league lead in steals. What an awesome acquisition for the Raptors, considering Norm was going to leave as a free agent anyways.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure that he was good. Like, he certainly didn't want to leave. I think the thinking at the time was they weren't really going to be able to afford him and pay him that kind of money. The thinking was that they would get a cheaper version of Norm, a more affordable version of Norm, with a younger Gary Trent, who probably wouldn't get as much money on the open market. Of course, Trent then goes off, has a really strong month or two with the Raptors towards the end of last season, and Trent ends up getting as much as Norm does in free agency. So that didn't quite pan out the way that some people thought that it might. But the Raptors, of course, made the trade for a couple other reasons. One is that, I mean, at the time, Trent was a restricted free agent as opposed to Norm, who was unrestricted. So it gave them a little bit more flexibility in terms of how they could operate with the cap holds and all that. It's complicated CBA stuff and didn't really end up being too much of a factor anyway, because the Raptors didn't spend their money in free agency. But they also made the trade, as you mentioned, because Trent is younger and fits a little bit better within the development window that the Raptors currently have with their current players. Obviously, Scotty Barnes coming in as a rookie, but also 25-year-old OG Anunoby and 27-year-old Pascal Siakam, Fred VanVleet. Trent just fits in a little bit better with that group. in terms of how he's developed to this point, I agree with you. I think he's well ahead of schedule in terms of what the Raptors were envisioning and even hoping for. And I think the key there is what you mentioned is the defense, because we knew he could score. We knew he could shoot the ball. It turned out to be, I think, a lot more important to have him on offense than it may have been, just given the strengths and weaknesses of this team. They've really needed him, and man, when he missed those six games, you could really see where they lacked offensively in terms of the shooting and his scoring ability. But defensively, he's way further along than we thought he'd be. They liked his upside on that end of the floor when they made the trade, but he's taken a big step in that area this year. At the top of the league in deflections, he competes really hard. Like, I just like his level of play on that end. It's been relatively consistent. He doesn't have very many nights where you look at and say, okay, well, the focus isn't there or the energy is there. He's been a bit of a revelation this year, and he doesn't get enough love, obviously, because Pascal Siakam, Fred VanVleet, they've been playing at an all-star level. I don't even think OG Anunoby has been getting as much love as he deserves for how well he's been playing recently. But, yeah, I mean, the Raptors have this core in place. You talk about the big three, VanVleet, Siakam, Anunoby, and now it's a core four with Barnes. But really, it's this core of five guys with Trent in there that I think the Raptors like a lot. I mean, you don't want to say that anybody is untouchable. If there's a offer that blows them away at the trade deadline or maybe in the offseason, I think they consider it. But it would take a lot right now, I think, to pry any of those five guys from the Raptors. They're looking to add, not to subtract, at the trade deadline. They want to fortify that core, add to it, add a little bit more depth, and we've obviously seen that that's a need for this team recently, rather than break up a core that they feel really good about.
Josh Lewenberg is our guest. He is TSN's Raptors reporter, also the host alongside Nikki Reyes of the Raptors Beat at 10 a.m. every Thursday here on TSN 1050. So, Jaylee, you say the Raps want to add. How aggressive do you think they will be? Not necessarily in adding players, but specific needs. And do you think there's a chance that there could be a big maneuver, perhaps involving one of the guys you mentioned? Or will this be kind of adding just depth along the roster?
No, I don't think they're going to subtract anybody from that core. That doesn't mean that they don't make a big move, of course, because if they're not going to trade one of those five starters, the only means really that they have to make a big addition is draft capital. Are they willing to part with their future first-round picks? And they're one of the few teams in the NBA that does have all of their draft picks to work with in a trade. To me, that's the big question, right? Because they've been pretty clear all along. They want to balance short-term success of winning this season, competing this season, with the long-term vision, building and developing for the future. The question here is, how close do they think they are? Are they willing to expedite that process by trading some of those long-term assets for somebody that can come in here and move the needle? And to be clear, like, I don't think they do that for a short-term fix, right? Like, they're not quite at that point where they were in 2019, where you can go in and push your chips in and sort of look at it like, okay, we're one piece away or two pieces away from really reaching that next level. This isn't a Marc Gasol scenario. I think if they're making a big trade, if they are moving first round picks, it's got to be for somebody that makes sense both in the short term and the long term. Maybe they come in and raise the short term ceiling of this team. They plug a few holes, address a few needs, and there are quite a few of them, right? Like, I mean, you can look specifically at the center position or the backup point guard position. They definitely need shooting on the wing, but they're also just so desperate for depth right now. Guys that can give you reliable rotation minutes off the bench that you can pretty much add anybody at any position. If they can play, the Raptors could use them right now. But that said, I think, sort of similar to what I was saying with Gary Trent, I think it'll be the same idea this year, where you want somebody that's young enough that they can fit into this core and this long-term picture that the Raptors have, and under contract for a few more years as well, or somebody maybe that the Raptors would own their bird rights. I think they're looking to walk a line here. It's easier said than done to find somebody that checks off all of those boxes. And the big question will be, if that perfect player, if that dream scenario doesn't play out, are they willing to part with some of those assets, to part with some of those picks for a guy that's going to come in and plug some holes this year?
Josh, you talked about the depth of this team, and we've clearly seen Nick Nurse not trust his bench, and one of the sort of repercussions from that has been extending, you know, some of their star players, and one in particular, Fred VanVleet, who's missed the last two games with knee soreness. I mean, that sort of raises, at least my eyebrows when I see that. How concerning are you, or how concerned are you right now about Fred VanVleet and knee soreness being attached to his injury status?
Yeah, well, I think it was bound to happen, right? It was only a matter of time before those minutes start to take their toll. You know, the Raptors were down playing it. Nurse was down playing it, saying, hey, the guys want to play. They love it. And even Fred VanVleet came out almost in defense of Nick Nurse, saying, don't blame him. It's on all of us. We want to play. I mean, right now, let's be real, like it's on the front office more than anything else to go out there and get these guys some help, because in some respect, I don't blame Nurse. We've talked about this over the last few weeks as well. Like, I understand the dilemma when you consider how little the bench has been able to contribute this year. Now, I have liked what I've seen from Delano Banton over the last couple games. Chris Boucher has been a lot better. So there are some guys there, but at the same time, whenever Nurse has turned to Svi Mihailuk, and I mean, Malachi Flynn hasn't been very good this year, there's not a lot to work with. So, yeah, if the goal is to win games this year, and for the head coach, that's usually always the top priority. He's doing everything he can to try and squeak out these wins. Yeah, they're going to lean on their best players. But listen, if it was as simple as saying, do you have your best chance at winning with your starters running on fumes or your end of bench guys with fresh legs, the answer is going to be the former more often than not. But you also have to consider the big picture, because these are guys that you need not only in years to come, but even in the spring, April and May, if this team has playoff aspirations, which it seems like they do. So it's tough. I don't know what the answer is right now. I know that the answer for this team, the only real solution, is to go out there and add depth at the deadline. So I can promise you, Masai Ujiri and Bobby Webster, this team has their attention right now. Nick Nurse has their attention. It's almost been like a statement from Nurse over the last few weeks. The very tight 6 or 7 man rotation. Now, obviously, certain guys missing games because of these nagging injuries. Like, how can you not look at the situation here and come up with that conclusion that this team needs more depth?
Two teams that I think it's pretty safe to say will be very active ahead of the trade deadline. They are in action tonight against one another. The Lakers and the Sixers. It's a game you can watch on TSN4. It's the NBA on TNT. It's a marquee game in the States. What do you think is more likely, J-Lew, that the Lakers somehow move Russell Westbrook before the deadline, or the Sixers finally move on from Ben Simmons?
Oh, man, I think the Simmons situation is probably more likely, if for no other reason than the Sixers should be feeling a sense of urgency. He's movable. Like, I'm not sure that Russell Westbrook at this stage is movable. It's tough to say that in the NBA. At this point, just about every contract seems movable, and Westbrook has been moved over the years, although it's been for contracts that are just as bad, if not worse. It's not like in some of these other leagues where long-term contracts end up going 5, 6, 7+ years. But the Lakers situation is tough. We've talked about this in the past too. They just don't have much to work with. They don't have picks they can trade. They don't have assets, the contracts, young players that are especially desirable for other teams. Whereas with Simmons, he can be moved. It's just a question of whether or not the Sixers are going to bite the bullet and go out there and do it. They're really trying to make it seem like there isn't a huge sense of urgency for them. Daryl Morey's saying, all right, well, we'll wait until the offseason, or we'll wait until next year, or the year after. We'll play out the entire contract if we need to. I think most people recognize that there's got to be at least some gamesmanship there, right? Like, this is the time of year that you always have to take things with a grain of salt, that teams are trying to posture and gain as much leverage as they can. But I'm not sure how much we're buying that. The Sixers are getting an MVP caliber year from Joel Embiid. He's in his prime. The clock is ticking on him and on them. And they're in this weird position right now where they are really good, but clearly not good enough to take down some of the elite teams in the Eastern Conference and definitely not in the Western Conference. They need something. The question is any team out there willing to offer them enough that they think it's worth moving on from Simmons, that they can move the needle and compete for a championship, feel like they've gotten enough from their asset without feeling that they're being taken advantage of? I don't know, but I think that's a lot closer to 50-50 than the Russell Westbrook situation is.
Fascinating dilemma for the Sixers. You think about the team that they have now versus the team they had when, you know, the Kawhi shot back in 2019. I understand Jimmy Butler was on that team, and he's a tremendous player. But, I mean, aside from that, not overly different. Of course, Ben Simmons hasn't been in the lineup. That's a big difference. But it'll be really interesting to see how they approach it, because you're right. Embiid right now, I think you can make a very compelling argument that he will be the MVP of the NBA this year. And yeah, you're really going to go into the playoffs with an asset like Simmons just rotting on your bench and not move him for a player who could help you win this year? Because as we know with Joel Embiid and big men in general, it could fall off the rails at any point in time. So with a guy like Embiid, who has already had injury concerns throughout the course of his career, you might want to strike while the iron is hot, I think is the saying. And maybe we'll see if Daryl Morey can do just that, or wait into the offseason and try to get James Harden to pair with Embiid and just hope he can do it again next year. Josh, you and Nikki, 10 a.m., the Raptors beat. I understand Bobby Marks on the show today.
Yeah, so lots of trade deadline discussion. 2 weeks from today.
Ooh, wow.
It's the trade deadline.
Oh, can't wait to listen.
Right. Bang, indeed. All right, thank you, Josh. We appreciate it.
All right, guys.
All right, Josh Lewenberg, TSN's Raptors reporter here on First Up. Sup. The Simmons thing is a tough one, where on one hand, you want to extract the most you can for a very valuable asset. But on the other hand, there's a sense of urgency considering Philadelphia, if you can get something good for Simmons, someone who can contribute a piece who's certainly in your starting lineup playing big minutes and is a good player, or two good players, you're in the mix in the East for sure, because you have Embiid, who might be the best player in the East this year. I mean, he and Giannis, you can make an argument for those two for sure. So it's a difficult one. I don't envy Daryl Morey and that decision that he has to make. And I think there's a lot of posturing through the media, because it was reported yesterday from Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN that the Nets will not trade Harden before the deadline. And why would they? That would make
no
sense. So yeah, maybe in the offseason it's a different scenario because of the extension he didn't sign in the offseason, last offseason, I should say. So, yeah, very fascinating stuff in the NBA for sure. 2 weeks, eh? That's all it is till the trade deadline. And
it's crazy to think that it's that close.
I know. So we'll see how that plays out. But my guess, Simmons probably moves on. And the Lakers, I mean, they got Anthony Davis back, and he looked good
the other night.
And they won, and I mean, if they can string off some dubs, maybe
that could probably be the best acquisition you could ask for come trade deadline, right? Just getting him back healthy.
Hall of Fame player, Anthony Davis, when he's moving and doing his thing in the post.
Yeah, and I can tell you one thing. If he comes back and he's the player that he is, don't expect LeBron James to just sit on his hands come trade deadline. He will be actively working the phones. Not Rob Pelinka. LeBron will be actively working the phones, trying to trade for help, or at least guys to get the Lakers over the top, because he's not gonna sit there and waste another year. This guy, you know, understands that the end is probably near in his career, and he's got a chip on his shoulder to prove people wrong about the way they've criticized him this year.
No doubt. Absolutely. And interesting couple of weeks in the NBA.
Yeah.
No doubt. Interesting day in the NHL yesterday. The Leafs beating the Anaheim Ducks, but a big signing in Pittsburgh and a big suspension in Buffalo. We'll detail both of those as the fourth hour of First Up continues. This is TSN 1050.
Coley Acabo household. Later tonight, it's your birthday, buddy. Happy birthday. Age 39, Carlo Coley Acabo. Chrissy, give him the studio audience applause. Maybe a bang. Let's get the sound clips going for our boy. There it is. All right. Congratulations.
Mazel tov. Mazel tov.
Mazel tov.
We should also wish mazel tov to Jeff Carter, who got a 2-year contract extension yesterday. A little bit of a surprise, to be honest. Not necessarily the term, which was 2 years, or the amount of money, just over $3 million per, but the no-move clause that he received. I guess it makes sense, right? Jeff Carter's a free agent. He's probably getting more than $3 million per year. Still a
well,
really
here,
good player.
Here's
and
the thing.
I was just surprised to see that. I think it's a good deal for Pittsburgh. I think it's a good deal for Jeff Carter.
Yeah, well, I think why Jeff Carter probably wanted that into his contract was because he, like everybody else, is curious to see what this offseason is going to look like for the Pittsburgh Penguins. You know, you've got Malkin up, you've got Crosby up, you've got Letang up for contracts. And, you know, Carter's probably sitting there saying, okay, I'll take some nice security on a 2-year deal. But if things change this year, I want to have a say on where I'm going, not just have you trade me like Philadelphia did when they traded him to Columbus and he wasn't happy going to Columbus. So I think that's more of the security that he, you know, he at least pushed for in the no movement clause so that he just has more of a say on if he doesn't stay there of where he goes. So I wouldn't necessarily be surprised by that. It's just, you know, that's Ron Hextall and Brian Burke, you know, showing a little bit of respect for the guy that's, definitely had a little bit of a turnaround career in Pittsburgh.
Sure.
He's revitalized his game and played really well. And who's to say? I mean, maybe all those guys do come back, and he's just another nice piece to that team moving forward.
There was a report in The Athletic, I think it was Josh Yohe, who said that Malkin is interested in remaining in Pittsburgh. That should surprise no one. He spent his entire career there and is willing to take a pay cut. I think Malkin's around, what, $8 million? Oh, but I think he makes more than Crosby, no? I'm pretty sure he's like $9 million. Arad, why don't you look that up?
I'm pulling up Cap Friendly. So,
all right, Arad, let's look up the salary for Malkin. And I think he probably should be taking a pay cut, considering, you know, the cap constraints in the NHL for all teams. And think of all the good players that Pittsburgh has been able to acquire over the years, Gensel and Rust. And, I mean, they've done an excellent job of accumulating assets. So Malkin probably takes less. Letang apparently is looking for a raise. Malkin, 9.5. Okay, so
9.5,
that makes
yes.
He's in line with, I think Kucherov, Point, all those guys make 9.5 on Tampa.
Sorry, so Crosby is not up this year, but you know.
No, no. Crosby is 8.7, and Malkin is 9.5. But Letang is looking for a raise, reportedly, which, again, shouldn't surprise anyone either. And I think he's a guy who's going to be in high demand. And I love connecting dots. You know, he did it earlier with the Denver Broncos hiring the Green Bay Packers OC. The Montreal Canadiens hired Chris Letang's now former agent, Kent Hughes, as their general manager. I think there's a big difference. I don't think Montreal is looking at it like, Letang, if we get him, it's over. We're going to be back in the cup final. That's not what I mean. But clearly, Letang is a guy who's still excellent. I mean, he's having a great year at Pittsburgh, a power play quarterback, one of the great offensive defensemen in the last 10, 15 years for sure with the Penguins. So if they lose him, I mean, that's a problem for sure. This is why for so many teams, we talked about the Philadelphia 76ers and how this is their year to go all in and really make a push. Pittsburgh, you have Malkin, you have Crosby, you've got Jeff Carter now. You're down the middle. You're as good as anyone, really, in the NHL. I think that's safe to say. You got great wingers. Gensel and Rust are having outstanding years. You've got Letang. You've got Tristan Jarry in goal. Why couldn't Pittsburgh make a run? They were just a point back of a first in the Metro now behind the New York Rangers with a game in hand. It's going to be a dogfight for all those teams in the Metro. I think the Rangers, the Penguins, the Hurricanes, and the Capitals. And then it's amazing to see the drop-off after those four. Columbus almost 20 points behind Washington for fourth in the Metro. Ooh, that is tough. But the same really applies in the Atlantic, too, right, where Boston and Detroit, there's a huge gap between them. So the eight teams in the East are already decided. It's kind of just who plays whom and who gets home ice and everything like that. So I guess that adds another sense of security for a team like Pittsburgh who might continue to push their chips in the middle. And they've been so active over the years acquiring wingers to play alongside Crosby and Malkin. And my guess is they probably do it again this year, because why not? Burke and Hextall, they know what they're doing. These guys have been around the NHL. They know when the clock is ticking. And I don't think it's the end. I mean, Crosby's still a tremendous player. Malkin.
No, but you've got to take advantage of the window while it's still there, right?
Exactly, because that window doesn't stay open forever. And
right. You wouldn't be doing your job as a GM if you weren't taking that approach.
And I think the same applies for the Boston Bruins, right? I think in many respects, Boston and Pittsburgh are in similar situations where Bergeron and Marchand are getting up there in the years. Again, these are still awesome players. Bergeron and Marchand and Crosby and Malkin are all in their 30s, mid-30s, basically, or late-30s, and all still playing basically as prime hockey, at least as far as production goes. Maybe their age isn't in that same ballpark. But, yeah, those guys are all still awesome players. So you'd really need to look at the situation. Like, all right, are we going to hold on to this first-round pick? Or are we going to do our best to parlay that into one of the many players who are going to be available leading up to the deadline? You think about some of the impact guys that could be acquired. We talk about Chychrun. We talk about John Klingberg in Dallas, Ben Sherrod in Montreal. A number of quality top four defensemen will be available. And then some of the forwards, and yesterday it was, I believe Chuck Fletcher comes out and says that he's the GM of the Philadelphia Flyers, that it's up to Claude Giroux if he wants to stay or if he wants to go. He's a free agent at the end of the year.
Shouldn't be surprised by that, Flyers.
No, not at all. And listen, you had Claude Giroux to any team. Like, he's not what he once was. I mean, one of the best point producers in the last 10 years in the NHL for sure. Healthy, great leader, and you saw it firsthand your time in Philly. You know, Boston adds Claude Giroux to their second line with Taylor Hall. Like, maybe they had Krejci back. Then, you know, the band's back together, and you're looking good. And I think that's something that's a little underreported, too, the possibility that David Krejci returns from the Czech Republic, and that's been rumored a lot, much like Tuukka Rask made his return. Krejci could do the same in the second half of the season as well. So Boston, Pittsburgh, I think they're teams in similar boats, and it wouldn't surprise me at all if they are uber-aggressive with 6.5 weeks till the NHL trade deadline.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't be surprised either. I mean, you talk about, you know, where they stand, and that's the GM's job. You've got to evaluate, you know, the players that you have and the potential of how far you can take this team with one or two additions to the group. And for Claude Giroux, obviously, you know, in Philly, they talked about the season that they've had where, you know, basically they're open for business. Everybody's available for the price. From what I know of Claude Giroux is, this guy's an ultimate competitor. I can almost guarantee you that he is going to explore playing somewhere else, because if there's one thing this guy loves to do, it's compete and to win. And I can't imagine the type of season, you know, he's going through emotionally, knowing that it's been just off the rails in Philadelphia. He wants to feel that energy again of being a playoff player and being an important player on a team and having playoff success. And when you can control or have control in those conversations, really dictate about where you can go to give yourself that best chance, you'd be stupid not to take advantage of it.
Yeah, Giroux's had so many battles over the years with the Washington Capitals, with the Penguins. Think about Giroux and Crosby in the playoffs. Just the Flyers, even going back to the Mike Richards, Jeff Carter days, the Coley Akavo days, I guess you could call them as well, maybe a little bit before that. And those were such iconic teams and ultimately never won the Stanley Cup. And that's something that Giroux, of course, would want to do. I don't know where the fit is for Giroux, and is it a team in the Atlantic? I mean, could Florida make a move on him? Like, I suppose it's like I know Al's brother yesterday on Overdrive during the Filter segment suggested that Claude Giroux be a fit on the Leafs. And listen, that's not happening.
No.
It just doesn't make any sense. but I think what it speaks to is there will be an arms race, not only in the Atlantic, but in the NHL as a whole, because this is a season where so many things are up in the air. You've had the COVID pauses. Like, I think the next month is going to be really weird in the NHL, with the cluster of games happening in such a short period of time. Teams could look to get ahead of this trade deadline. And that's something Brian Burke has been famous for, right? Making deals long before the deadline just to get guys acclimated. And I think for the Leafs and bringing it back to Toronto, I think that is essential. If they're going to go out and get a defenseman and you're going to pay a big price for one, you're going to play him next to Jake Muzzin. I think that's just what you have to do, especially depending on what you're giving up and what you're bringing in. Why not do it earlier. And I understand the price might be more steep, but you at least build up the chemistry. And listen, you know the importance of familiarity when you're talking about a defense pair. Give him some time to gel. I think just throwing a guy in on, what, March 21st and expecting, you know, Muzzin and this unnamed defenseman who, listen, it could be a lot of guys, just to gel immediately, that's a tall task. How long did it take for you to really develop a bond with a D pair?
Well, depending on how well you know the person, right?
Exactly, I mean, yeah.
Like, if you know a guy off the ice and, you know, you've had conversations and stuff, it's really easy. You know, the biggest part of developing that chemistry is just being able to feel comfortable communicating with the guy. And that was a big part of, you know, at least my preparation and my success in playing the game of hockey was I was a big talker. Like I part of my game was just giving information and receiving information. And when you have that, it makes the game easier, because if you don't, you're basically playing the game deaf and blind. And that's not easy to do when you're on the ice. So, you know, obviously some of my best years were playing with Alex Pietrangelo, and there's no secret as to why. I mean, we were the closest friends off the ice. So, but you know, some of the other guys that I play with later in my career, it was just being comfortable enough to be able to talk to them about anything, both on and off the ice, that would obviously allow that comfort to at least take place, you know, as a pair. Like me,
it's like
you.
Radio,
right?
It's like radio, same right? thing, same thing. I'm Pietrangelo. That's right. Probably more
right.
like I don't know, Luke Shen or something. No disrespect to Luke Shen. That's actually a compliment to Luke Shen, because, you know, I like to think very highly of myself. I try to. We'll wrap things up for today's program. On the other side, we'll play you a interaction between Paul Bissonnette and Steve Yzerman yesterday on the NHL on TNT, which created a little bit of a stir on social media. Yzerman's reaction to Biz's question is something you're going to want to stick around and hear on First Up. This is TSN 1050. Wrapping things up here on First Up for this Thursday. And last night, the NHL on TNT, they were celebrating Wayne Gretzky's birthday, as we are celebrating your birthday this morning, Carlo. And they had Steve Yzerman on the broadcast. And Paul Bissonnette, I mean, we love Biz. Spittin' Chicklets, awesome pod. Those guys do an amazing job. And he's hilarious. I mean, he's awesome on the NHL and TNT. He's must watch. Listen to his question and answer with Steve Yzerman last night, which really drew a lot of attention on social media.
Steve, Paul Bissonnette here. You know, you talk about your career and then obviously transitioning as an incredible hockey mind on the management side of things. Given that there's probably a lot of it constantly on your mind, what do you do in order to decompress when you get away from the rink and maybe enjoy yourself?
I can't be honest with that one. not on national TV.
What is he talking about there? I'm trying to figure out what.
I mean,
what
you got to use your imagination on that one, man. I'm not going to answer for Steve Yzerman, but
that's fair.
Clearly he doesn't like golfing because he says he's not good at it. So, I don't know.
What could it be?
What could it be?
Steve Yzerman do? What would you answer that question? I guess you'd say golf and, you know, watching sports.
Yeah.
Yzerman couldn't have just said that. I mean, instead of adding that whole, you know, cloak of questionability. Yeah, like, what is he talking
maybe
about?
Maybe him and the New England Patriots owner, what's his name? Robert Kraft hang out a lot.
Oh, so you think he goes to massage parlors? Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, we'll do some investigation over the course of the day. You'll be celebrating your B-Day. I'll be doing nothing, really. I will be on Causes Show at 2 o'clock. Looking forward to that.
Gameplay.
Thanks to Arad. Thanks to 20 Fingers. Happy birthday, Coco. I'm Eric Corolla.
Thank you,
he's
guys.
Carlo Koliakovo. We'll be back at 6 a.m. tomorrow.
Ciao.
Bang!